Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Hello, it's Thursday the 7th of March and welcome to Paper Cuts, where we're still waiting for Jeremy Hunt to announce a tax cut for podcasters. If you enjoy what we do and you'd like to give us a few quid to make up for the Chancellor ignoring us, remember you can support us and get a little bit extra Paper Cuts by joining the Paper Cuts Supporters Club. We spend all the money on papers, producers and occasional dog treats for the Paper Cuts pooches. Visit back.papercutsshow.com, that's back.papercutsshow.com to sign up. There's a link in the show notes. Now, here are the headlines for today's edition. Tax throwing, Hunt's budget dominates the front pages. Frisky business, The Times reveals the nation's sex secrets. Get the bag in, it's the fort that counts when it comes to Oscars goodies, apparently. Welcome to Paper Cuts, we read the papers so you don't have to. Thanks for joining us on Paper Cuts. I'm Jacob Jarvis, and I want to publicly apologise on behalf of Jeremy Hunt after he tried to be funny yesterday. Let's hope he never does that again. Joining me today is New Statesman columnist and owner of Henry the Cavapoo, John Elledge. Hi, John.
Woof woof.
And with us is CNN contributor and owner of Harvey the Rottweiler. It's Holly Thomas. Hello, Holly.
Morning. Maybe not for long. He kept me up all night.
Holly, what have we got on the front pages today?
So the Mirror just has a kind of general wail. It's a stagnant budget for a stagnant country by a stagnant government. After 14 years of power, is that the best you can do? We deserve better. So no analysis, no sort of real angle besides wah, and then a sort of a photo of Jeremy Hunt with a kind of rictus grin.
Yeah. The Mirror is kind of what would happen if a journalist fell down a well and was left trapped there.
Yeah, exactly. And then a tiny, tiny little picture of Keir Starmer pointing his finger. The Mail has budget special asking the question, find out inside if it's left you richer or poorer, as though that budget was the would be the difference between those two things. And then underneath that, it asks, will it be enough to see off Labour? I mean, I don't know, man.
The answers to both the questions on that front page are just no. And it's also got a weird Hunger Games vibe, doesn't it? It's like, open up to see if you're poor or if you're rich. And if we hate you or not.
I like the idea of the question is, has it left you richer or poorer? No.
No.
The Sun, exclusive strip party undies. And then I have no idea what that's about. There's just a photo of a woman with a pair of knickers, just stretching them.
I believe they're Prince Harry's.
Yeah. Oh. So I think their Harry's pants sell for $250,000. And this is to do with, they've weirdly combined, they want to bury the budget somehow, but they know they need to put the budget on the front page. So they've basically done this weird, so Harry's pants sell for $250,000.
And Hunt has given us a few knicker too.
Yeah.
Which isn't a thing.
No.
You know what confused me about this front page is I immediately went to the photo of the woman with the who's wearing a very pale pink dress and the black underwear, and I immediately became so stressed at the thought of wearing those two colours together that was all I could think about.
It's a really embarrassing front page.
But no, this is one story, because actually if you dig into the Treasury Green Book, towards the back there's an appendix which talks about how we're going to pay off the national debt by selling Prince Harry's underwear a piece at a time
to
weird Americans.
Yeah.
And then obviously, saving the best till last, Daily Star says fry-ups turn blokes into stud muffins. I had a fry-up this morning, so I'm hoping that I will be a stud muffin
by maybe noon.
And then at the top, it says hug a slug. Like, I don't need to know. The star loves animals.
Proud to
love animals.
Think about that. Even if I wanted to hug a slug, I physically don't think I could unless it was fucking huge.
Yeah. No.
They'd squeeze out, wouldn't they? You're just trying to hug it. Go. Yeah, it doesn't work.
Don't think about it too much, guys. And then on the left hand side, a tiny, tiny box. It simply says budget. Blah blah blah.
Yeah, I like that.
Which is it's the best headline regarding the budget.
I love
that
the star. Please hire me.
John, what have you got? You've got the serious papers
I
today.
I do. You've given me the serious papers again.
You're a serious man.
So the Times has gone with, this is in quotes, I'm not sure if they believe it, but they might do. We're turning the corner. It's above a picture of Jeremy Hunt holding his hands apart, like he's talking about the size of a fish.
It's a 10-degree corner.
The Guardian has a different quote, which I don't think was from the budget statement. A last desperate act. I don't think that was how Hunt described it. The Eye continuing. Something very weird is going on with The Eye, isn't it? The Eye has for some reason gone with Labour rules out taxing wealthy to avoid £20 billion of cuts. It's like, this is... I don't understand how that's your lead.
Yeah.
like that doesn't... I mean, I suppose it's nice that they're paying attention to the Labour Party on Budget Day, but it just feels like an odd choice from an ostensibly neutral newspaper.
Yeah, the weird aggressive neutrality is quite a strange
thing. Is it
thing,
neutral, though? It just feels like...
Well, that's the thing, is it? Reality isn't neutral at the moment. Yeah, the Tories are fucked and they're doing a bad job.
Yeah, and it feels like they're overshooting in the other direction.
Yeah.
The Telegraph, no pretense of neutrality over here. Hunt signals the end of NI. That's National Insurance, they're not Northern Ireland. Picture of like him and this picture is like, it's like Sunak and Hunt looking at each other on the front bench, and it does look like a publicity shot for a romantic comedy. But my favourite bit of the Telegraph front page is the top. It says the best comment and analysis, with a really quite striking lineup of columnists there, including Miriam Cates. So that's nice.
Well, I'm sure we can dig in a little bit to what they had to say. Holly, just a quick one on the front pages. There is a little bit about Nikki Haley, isn't there? Which is kind of quite big news, but quite predictable news.
Yeah, well, predictable in some senses. I don't think anyone anticipated that anyone besides Donald Trump was going to wind up the Republican candidate. But Haley lasted a lot longer than people expected. People thought she might drop out either before the South Carolina primary, because that's a home state, it'd be embarrassing for her to lose. She stuck it out. And in doing so, she kind of revealed a lot of Trump's weaknesses. So, I mean, she's been winning sort of between 30 and 40% of the Republican vote, leaving Trump with kind of like 60 to 70 on a really good day. And just for contrast, Biden is, even with a kind of strong protest vote over Gaza, despite that goat butting him constantly, he's been getting like 80%.
Okay.
She's kind of like bucked the trend. She's also, in her concession speech, not endorsed Donald Trump, which would be the typical move. Mitch McConnell has endorsed him after kind of 3 years of an impasse between them. And yeah, she's only 52. So, I mean, she could run again in 20 years' time and be younger than either of these guys.
Jeremy Hunt gave what will hopefully be his last budget for a long time yesterday. And as the papers have reported, there was no rabbit pulled out of the hat to save the Conservatives. So, John, the budget is largely quite boring and the reporting of it has been quite embarrassing, I'd say. So just can you give me 30 seconds and explain what I need to know?
Okay, so firstly, there was no rabbit from the hat because Jeremy Hunt has been going around for weeks talking to journalists going, hey, look at my rabbit. Yeah. So we all knew what was going to be in there. The biggest move was 2 pence off national insurance, which is the tax on income that we don't call income tax. That's quite good in some ways. It's an actual tax cut for working people, not even rich retired ones who the Tories normally look after, people with jobs, so that's nice. It will benefit high earners a lot more than low earners. The tax cut is worth 5 times as much if you earn over 50K than under 20K. It's also not clear what political impact it will have, because this is the second time he's done this in 4 months. And when he did it in November, it made no difference whatsoever to the polls. The tax proportion of national income being paid in tax is still at historic high, because although tax levels have been cut, thresholds have not, and inflation's going up. So we're all paying more tax that way. He also removed the cliff edge in terms of the clawback of child benefit. That will also benefit higher earners most of all, but it's generally thought to be a good thing because it simplifies stuff. And it's kind of the middle income families who should be voting voting Tory but aren't going to. He abolished non-dom status, which is the thing that allows rich foreigners to pay lower taxes. In doing so, he stole a plan which the Labour Party has wanted for years and had repeatedly been told was not affordable and would ruin the country, but apparently now it's fine. He increased taxes on tobacco, introduced them on vapes. He's not raised those on alcohol or fuel duties, and he's done absolutely fuck all about public services, so the roof of your school is probably still falling in and your council is going bust. How was that?
That was pretty solid. Although, I mean, really, the big story should be that Jeremy Hunt needs to lose the whip if he's going around showing people his rabbit all over Westminster.
I mean, this was a thing. Like, people, like, chancellors used to have to resign if they sort of gave any hint of what they were going to do in their budget to anyone other than the House of Commons. And now he's just like there were reporters just tweeting the full contents of the budget before he stands up. And we've all just accepted that this is the way the world is. It's quite annoying.
Holly, how have the papers covered it then? The Sun has, as we mentioned, the kind of most embarrassing and weird front page for a while, and there's an honourable mention for the Star. But yeah, how have they gone about diving into this?
So the Sun has possibly my favourite column on this. I would say, by Trevor Kavanagh, generously, I would say it's maybe 150 words. And he essentially starts, Rishi Sunak's plan is working. Inflation is falling fast. Energy bills and mortgages are down. Good times are a-coming. What? Did someone just like knock you on the head 15 years ago and you've just woken up? And then in the Times, I know there's another kind of crazy lineup in the Telegraph, but the Times has a piece covering three writers' opinions, starting with Daniel Finkenstein, which starts, Jeremy Hunt's politics are broadly mine and I like his personal style too. So unsurprisingly, I'm pretty sympathetic to this budget. It's just like completely laying his cards on the table. It's I just like them. So I guess I like this. And then in the same piece, you have Philip Collins' weird sort of like, he really leans into the whole rabbit from the hat metaphor. And then it's just like, it's a very telling metaphor. It's like, okay, where is the analysis? he's literally analysing that, not the budget. And then finally, you have Emma Duncan talking some actual sense. So she sort of says it was a bit rich of Hunt to bang on about how Labour hasn't got a plan. And then literally the biggest thing that they, well, one of the sort of main points, which was the non-dom status, is lifted from Labour, and also mentions the grimmest number in the Office for Budget Responsibilities report, which is that the GDP per person in Britain is forecast to be about 1% lower in 2024 than it was at the beginning of this Parliament. She's the only one who sort of really says anything, even vaguely meaty.
John, who are you most embarrassed by in the papers today when it comes to just people completely making themselves sound really stupid?
So I am in awe of this lineup of Telegraph columnists, because they've got Alistair Heath, who you may recall, I think he's the editor of the Sunday Telegraph. He was really cheering on Kwasi Kwarteng's budget a couple of years ago. He's written a column under the headline, Britain is already further down the road to serfdom than many realise. Which is maybe not the review that Jeremy Hunt was looking for yesterday. But also, like, next to him on the front page, they've got Norman Lamont, who you may remember was Kwasi Kwarteng's predecessor as Chancellor in the 1990s. Yeah. And also, like, his predecessor in being, like, the Tory Chancellor that completely trashed their electoral hopes. Because he was the one who resided over Britain crashing out of the exchange rate mechanism, I believe, which sort of started the recession. Like, that's the moment you can see the polls turn almost immediately after the 1992 election.
And he also looks like he was in a few old school Hammer horror films from that.
He does. He's looking quite vampiric at this point, isn't he? On the other side of Alistair Heath, though, there's Miriam Cates. I've not been able to find her column because they haven't got page numbers and it doesn't seem to be online. I imagine, based on past evidence, that she is probably railing against the fact that buried in the budgetary statement, this stuff about how we're going to need immigration, she is probably going to be saying we need to have more kids. I'm just guessing.
Yeah, or to take the phones off of kids so they can go to work and make more money for the budget.
But it's like, it does kind of feel like a lot of the papers are just sort of like desperate to find something nice to say about this government and a reason to sort of say, oh, like the tide is turning, this is going to change everything, maybe now the Tories can win. And I'm very unclear as to the extent to which this is, you know, partisan bias, and the extent to which it's just the lobby is really bored. Like, it's been one story for a year. We're just waiting for the election and a change of government, and this government can do basically nothing till that happens.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
So the budget reporting is either boring or embarrassing, and now we're going to talk about something else that might be boring or embarrassing too. Sex. There's a bold headline in the Times which caught our attention. Brits' sex lives revealed. What goes on in the nation's bedrooms? Holly, this isn't quite the comprehensive study it makes out to be, though, is it?
No, it covers 21 people. To be fair, broad age range, so from 20s to 80s, you have to scroll for a long time to get to any women. You sort of have, like, here's what the men say, and then about, like, 5 years later, here's what the women say. What the men broadly say is, I would like to have this kind of sex. This is the kind of sex I'm having. I'm kind of doing all I can to keep having it, da-da-da. There's one, like, actually kind of thoughtful entry from this guy called James, who's 47, who mentions how, like, complicated, a complicating factor of being disabled. So he says, I have cerebral palsy and walk with crutches, which makes it difficult to literally have sex in various positions. The rest of the guys are very much sort of saying, like, I either take Viagra or have taken Viagra. Several of them say things like, I'm in a relationship. I've been in a relationship for a few years. I used to have really good sex in my youth or 10 years ago. But, you know, now I guess I sort of, like, we do missionary once a week and that's fine.
Yeah.
You kind of have to wonder if any of their partners are reading this.
Well, there's this guy here who I found quite amusing, which was, I can remember better sex in my youth, mostly on cocaine. But there wasn't the warm post-coital afterglow of feeling loved.
It should just be MDMA, really, shouldn't it?
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, that sounds more like a, so this person is 61, it sounds like more of a I wish I was young and going out and taking cocaine and having fun problem.
Yes.
Than sex life problem.
And it's interesting that the men, several of the men refer to having great sex when they were young, because on the women's side we have Naomi, who's 33, still young, who says, until I was well into my 20s, I thought orgasms were something other women had. likewise Layla, 29, describing a rubbish one night stand. In the morning, I said, you'd better go back to your hotel for breakfast. He replied, I'd love a blowjob. So, like, the men are all like, oh, sex was so good when I was young, when I would just demand blowjobs after performing horribly.
Can I read a couple of my favourite quotes?
Please.
Due to the fact I know we're having sex on Saturday, I won't masturbate past Wednesday.
So then they have really, really quick sex. Yeah.
Also, whenever I travel to Southeast Asia, there's a woman I call who will come to my hotel room and give me a naked massage. If someone were to call it prostitution, that would be accurate. Or my personal favourite, when I feel myself entertaining thoughts of straying, a train ride usually cures me. I empathise with that, ma'am.
Oh, I feel for the women. Hayley, 37. I don't particularly want to have sex with my husband. It's predictable, like watching an old episode of Friends that I know by heart. The moves and sounds he makes are always the same.
Well, basically, the advice here in the end is intimacy requires the sharing of what arouses each of you, what your specific needs are, and especially your creative ideas to spice it up. Initiate. So that's just, yeah, talk to your partners. So I think the whole thing we've learnt here is people... Men are into sex being good for them and don't think about anything else, but just talk about sex a little bit more. Yeah. Otherwise, so okay, we've hit a nice woke conclusion there.
Cured sex.
Yeah. Quirky headlines are the only consistently joyful bit of the newspapers, away from the doom and gloom of, well, everything else, pretty much. Here at Paper Cuts, we love digging out the best ones to make us all feel a little bit less jaded by the news. Holly, what have you got today? You've got a clean sweep from the Sun.
I have. So we have the story about a potential third Downton Abbey movie. After I've never watched Downton Abbey. I feel like I understand what it's about from like every kind of 2 second clip I've ever seen online.
I confuse it with Poldark, and I've never watched either of them. They kind of look like a similar thing. I might be completely wrong.
Oh, that's quite fun.
Okay.
Downton Abbey doesn't have Aidan Turner doing scything topless. Aidan Turner farming every day. Anyway, so there's a third Downton Abbey movie on the way. It says Abbey Days Here Again.
Okay.
I'm sort of, I don't know.
Yeah, fine.
I'm not sure I 100% get that.
Happy days are here again. Abbey days are here again.
Yeah, I sort of, it's not.
I'm not saying it's good, but that's what they're going.
Yeah. They've tried something there at least.
Okay, so the story for this one is at least quite funny. So a girl of 12 accidentally got locked in a pair of handcuffs at a museum, and staff didn't have a key. So a girl was... Sorry, that sounds really sadistic of me. I'm sure it was ultimately
fine. So what, their museum dress-up like sections, basically?
Isla got one wrist trapped on a family visit to the Interactive Black County Living Museum in Dudley, West Midlands, and the other cuff was fastened to a leather loop, which was presumably fastened to something else. Her builder dad, Paul, told the Sun... Why is it relevant that he's a builder? the museum's about picking things up and playing with them. There is a pair of cuffs just lying there. Ayla put them on her wrist and suddenly they just clicked. So yeah, she was trapped for 45 minutes. headline is, it's cuff justice.
That's good. I quite like that story as well. And, you know, I'm here for the builder dad.
That's the best one. Yeah, good, good on
the
you,
earth.
Paul.
John, what have you got? You've got a clean sweep from the Star.
I do. So page 3 of the Star. I think they're making up the names on their models. Anace, that's not a name. Anyway, next to that, the story about Madonna telling God to fuck off.
What?
I'm paraphrasing, but not by as much as you think. Apparently, last summer, she was in a medically induced coma because of a bacterial infection. She says that God told her, come with us, while she was fighting for her life. But the pop legend told the big guy, no, and later woke up in intensive care. There's a little picture of God saying, see you later, Madge, which is nice. Anyway, the headline is much less good than the story, I'm going to be honest. Madonna 1, God 0.
I mean, it's not a good headline, but
it's
that's a
terrible
a really
headline.
Good story.
That's a great story. I mean, it's just a little picture of God. I mean, like, where else? And this is just over the page from the Hugger Slug. It's just like, where else you get this other than the Star? Okay, on page 14, a man reckons he had 217 COVID jabs without a single side effect.
What?
Why? The 62-year-old said he had the boosters to protect himself from the illness for, quote, personal reasons.
Oh, I feel just really sorry for him.
Really ill.
Boffin, no, they didn't, though. They didn't. Boffin said they had seen confirmation of 134 of the jabs, so he might be lying about, I think, 83 of them. Anyway, the headline is Nut Jab.
That's great.
That is. And last but not least, sweet-toothed shoplifters are targeting tubs of fancy ice cream. The craze comes as store bosses lock down pricier goods such as booze, toiletries and meat. This is fucking bleak, isn't it? Mm. One staff member at Croydon Sainsbury's local store in South London said, they come in and just clear out the fridges. Ben and Jerry's and Haagen-Dazs are their favourites. The headline is Heist Cream.
It's quite a good headline. I mean, yeah, I want to know what sort of dodgy pub I can go to where I'm getting sold Ben and Jerry's under the table. That'd work quite well for me.
I'm David Baddiel. I'm a writer and a comedian and a Jew.
I'm Saeed Avasi. I'm a businesswoman and a politician and a Muslim.
Jews and Muslims always seem to be in the news or on the news. Lots of people talk about us, and this is us talking about ourselves.
The kind of things that people say don't touch, we are going to go there.
I mean, I think Jews and Muslims are talking about these things, but I think they're not talking about them together because they're worried that if they do, sparks might fly. A Muslim and a Jew go there.
Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Now it's time for me to go full Eat the Rich as we talk about the Oscars goodie bags. This is in The Guardian and online has the headline, Holidays, Liver Pills and 10,000 Dogs Dinners, Oscars Goodie Bags Revealed. Holly, so there's some weird thing about this that they're not really the official Oscars goodie bags, are there? So what's that and what's actually in them as well?
Yeah, so apparently the Academy has, for like a decade, just consistently said that there are no Oscars gift bags. But a PR company, a very persistent PR company, is like, there absolutely are.
Okay.
So yeah, essentially, it seems like this is just like a kind of PR gimmick and the company just keeps giving people stuff knowing that it will be reported on. And the Academy is like, not on our watch. The funnest thing in the goodie bag, I think, is literally just at the end. The losers get a special statuette via the goodie bag, which is a full-colour 3D selfie figurine, which just feels like such a troll. You know what I mean? Like, specifically, the losers get a really crap little like dummy that is specifically not endorsed by the Academy.
I got it at the Oscars. Is it an Oscar? Change the subject.
So, yeah, that's the deal. It seems like this year there's a strong concentration on pet-related stuff. So there's like a lot of raw dehydrated cat superfood. But yeah, there's also like holidays in Swiss chalets. It's a really, really wide range of things. Sugar-free cherry gummies or three nights in St. Bart's. So
not
yeah,
the hospital. It feels,
maybe once you've accidentally popped this weird, yeah.
So, John, apparently, though, it's not all about the cash value of the gifts, is it? Even though they spend over $100,000 on the cash value of the gifts.
Yeah, there's some utter shit in here. It's like these are from past years, I think. But one year they got a 50th anniversary collector's edition Rubik's Cube. Well, thanks a fucking lot. Also, my favourite, there was a private show with a magician who describes himself as something like mentalist to the stars. And I just keep thinking of Job from Arrested Development.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
How are they? It just sounds really shit. How are these good things? It sounds like every other terrible gift bag you've ever been to at any event, except slightly pricier. It's still full of crap you don't actually want.
I suppose the thing is, though, it's kind of like, what do you buy people who have everything?
Yeah.
You're going to have to go for some really weird stuff for Oscar winners.
Yeah. For the record, I'm open to being sent stuff on spec just in case I want it.
Well, what's your dream goodie bag item if you were going to be at the Oscars and get given something here?
Oh my God. Definitely the all of those holidays, 100%. And someone to take my effing dog for the night. I can get, I don't need like a mentalist magician. I need someone prepared to take on the loudest Rottweiler in the history of Rottweilers so that I can get 8 hours of sleep.
John, what about you? Have you got any dream items from this, or does anything within this story take your fancy?
I mean, it says they're worth $125,000 each. I'll have that.
You just have the whole thing.
Like, I promise I will tweet about these people if they give me $125,000. We can definitely come to an arrangement there. But like, they don't need to send me any of these actual items. Just to check.
I really don't
want a little John figurine. I'm not sure anybody wants a little John figurine.
And that brings us to the end of today's Papercuts. Thank you to Holly for joining us.
Thank you.
And thank you to John.
Thank you very much.
Remember, we are now out 5 days a week, and we would be really grateful for your support to carry on making sense of the papers for you every weekday. We're a 100% independent outfit. There's no big media owner behind us, and we spend around £600 a month on newspapers alone. If you could chip in a little bit to keep Papercuts on the road, for as little as £3 a month, you can get 20 episodes a month without adverts. And then with a little bit more, you can get extended versions of the show with extra material, and you can get your hands on some Papercuts mugs and t-shirts, which are occasionally modeled by our panel. To find out how, follow the show notes to back.papercutsshow.com. That's back.papercutsshow.com to find out more. Our beloved supporters also get a shout out on the show, and here are some now.
Hello, I refuse to say howdy, which is what this is in the script. Hello, and huge thanks from me to David Ankers and Baron Von Thiel.
That's such a good name.
Such an evil name. We love you, Baron Von Thiel. Don't stop giving us money.
It's definitely a doll that you should respect. Hello, and thank you so much to Thomas Smith, and I'm so sorry, I'm going to butcher this, Rochelle Cousineau? Cousinu?
Cousinu? Let's just say it loads and loads of ways and unfortunately butcher it in every single way possible.
Thanks,
but
Michelle.
Also, we'll get it right eventually, I'm sure. So, yeah, Cousinu, Cousinu, Cousinau, all of it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Rochelle.
And I'll say howdy because I've got no sort of beef with the word howdy. So howdy and thank you to Kevin Conroy and John Bartholomew. I've been Jacob Jarvis and you've been listening to Papercuts on a day when boffins have revealed that the iconic T-Rex may actually have been free dinosaurs known as the T-Rex, T. Regina and T. Imperator. It is not known yet where they bought their massive trench coat. See you tomorrow.
Papercuts was written and presented by Podmasters Managing Editor Jacob Jarvis with John Illidge and Holly Thomas. The producer was Liam Tate, assistant producer was Adam Wright, and audio producer was me, Jade Bailey. Music is by Simon Williams, socials by Kieran Leslie, design by Jim Parrott with original art by Modern Toss. The executive producer is Martin Boytosh and the group editor is Andrew Harrison. Papercuts is a Podmasters production.